Oh, well, hi, everybody. And there is a little more time here to make another program, probably about an hour in length. And this program will be program number 85. This is the 17th of June, 2020. We're on page 652 of The Externalization of the Hierarchy. The book ends at page 701. So I don't think we'll be able to do the whole thing, not by any means, but here we are just 6 months before Alice Bailey passed on. This is June 1949, organizing the ashrams into form on Earth. And the Tibetan begins. I would ask you at the time of this full moon of June, you know, Christ Festival, to spend a little time in visualizing the situation which is likely to come about on Earth if and when, as a result of the preparatory work done by and for humanity, the hierarchy is externalized or manifests itself as a definite, as a definite and reorganized organization upon the physical plane. We have to remember that following the 30 years work the Tibetan had intended, or told us that he had intended, to work on internal reorganizational matters within the hierarchy itself. And I'm sure that some of us have done this, you know, try to imagine what it could be like with members of the hierarchy present, visible, recognized by many for whom they are. Okay. Certainly we have done that in terms of the reappearance of the Christ. What will happen in the world if and when the masters of the wisdom function objectively and physically among people in, for instance, our great cities? For millions of years, they have worked behind the scenes ever since the Great War in Atlantis, utilizing the minds and brains and physical equipment of their disciples in order to carry out their beneficent purpose. Such workers under hierarchical inspiration are by no means mediumistic in their nature, but have established a right relationship with their own souls and are with the master and with the master of their ashram. They are responsive to hierarchical impression. They know the plans which the masters are endeavoring to carry out, and their cooperation is willingly and consciously given. They are left entirely free to work as they see fit after due recognition of the information and the inspiration given. So there is no coercion, and this has been going on for some time. There's always been the inner process of initiation, but and also the presence of masters in physical form to be reached by those who know how to do so. We're told about the Christ and his disciples reaching him in his retreat in Central Asia. But the masters have not been generally recognized. We're also told about the Master Jesus working with certain prelates in the High Church, maybe the Episcopal Church, and maybe the Catholic Church, who recognize him and maybe meeting with him in physical presence. This is all possible, but concealed from the great majorities of people. Will this system of working on behalf of humanity come to an end? In what manner will the effective and needed changes be made? How will the proposed organization take place? Or how much of these changes and organization, will average humanity be aware? These and many other similar questions almost automatically arise in your minds, and it is essentially necessary that the creative imagination of the advanced man, of aspirants, of probationary disciples — it seems that probationary disciples have gone another step than the average aspirant — as well as that of the working disciples, it's essentially necessary that the creative imagination does not run riot, creating those thought forms which could intervene between the true vision and the work to be done, and interfere, therefore, with the needed manifestation. So DK hopes to clarify all this to a permissible extent. And more will soon be clarified, because the decisions to be made immediately ahead do involve the actual coming out of the masters in the centers appropriate to them. So right now we have the method of contact, which is impression and maybe meditative dialogue. And as DK often says, some of you know how to reach me. In the demands of service in process of being undertaken, a line of communication that can be established with the master if his energy is needed for stimulating the correct carrying out of necessary service. But there are probably other methods as well for the chela on the thread following the stage of accepted discipleship. And then we have more and more contact possible with the chela in the aura, chela in the master's heart, and later through the blending of the lights, where the master is blending his light with another student who has, it seems, become a master himself. It is exceedingly important that the following facts should be realized. The thinking of those who are preparing humanity for the reappearance of the Christ must be most closely guarded and controlled. Wishful thinking and the formulation of plans in line with the ordinary human methods and techniques must not be permitted at this time, and we do see still a lot of it, including the announcing of the presence of the Christ in specified locales in physical form, which is at the best, wishful thinking, and then otherwise just delusion. The first lesson, therefore, that you have to learn is the work of preparation is controlled thought and sensitivity to hierarchical impression. Because our thoughts can interfere with the entire process if they are not in alignment with fact. So the guarding, the controlling, the regulation of thought about these subjects is most necessary. Otherwise, we have the possibility of fabrication. The esoteric bookstores are filled with it at the present time. And it's been a compromise from the quality of the material which heretofore has been available. It has started to descend into the realm of glamour and illusion quite precipitously. When you're in a bookstore and you either have to stoop very low or reach very high to get a good theosophical book or the Alice Bailey books, then you know something has happened. Whereas right in the middle, before your eyes and easily reached, are all of these illusory books which appeal to the personality but not the spiritual nature of man. Okay, the sole task which confronts you and all aspirants and disciples is to prepare humanity for two events. Now, if he calls it the sole task, it's got to be important because he's listed many tasks already. So this is what he considers germane. Necessary. The organization of certain of the master's ashrams in the different countries of the world wherein they can render effective service. And the reappearance of the Christ at a date somewhat later than the externalization of the ashrams and their physical plane organization, which I assume will be taking place noticeably to those who have eyes to see anyway, within the next 100 years or so. That will take us to the point where technically the vernal equinox aligns with the 30th degree of Aquarius and the age of Aquarius begins, technically considered, and the presence of Pisces and the sixth ray has faded out. Or faded out considerably. So, people have to be prepared for these events. The organization of certain of the master's ashrams in the different countries of the world wherein they can render effective service so that people know what they are looking for and expect that it can be found. They have to have their eyes directed towards that which is emerging. Now, especially in the five planetary centers, this will be the case. But other countries, maybe without such a planetary center within the country itself can also definitely be used. I mean, you know, we have planetary centers in the countries called Japan, India, Switzerland, France, Switzerland, England, as London is such a center, and in the United States. Prepare humanity for this kind of emergence so that it becomes credible, believable, and sought after, or at least there will develop an alertness to the possibility. All of this is because we can trust the Tibetan in the matter of truth, imminent within the next 100 years, and indispensable for the plan which will see to the redemption of humanity and eventually to the making sacred of the planet, which is already, we are told, interiorly sacred. How, where, when, and in what manner the masters will make their appearance is none of your affair. Their plans are laid, and they look for and expect no unthinking and unintelligent obstructions and assumptions from those to whom the task of preparation is committed. They have seen to it that the teaching of the New Age has been given to aspirants and disciples in the world for distribution. They are admitting new disciples into their ashrams, and as fast as is desirable and permissible, for the hierarchy works ever under law, they are passing them into the halls of initiation. All of this is going on, and we have to be careful lest through carelessness and an unthinking and exaggerative approach, we interfere with plans already well laid. So the intake, the ingathering is occurring. The period of radiation is occurring. It will now be the greatest period of radiation that we have had during the last 3,000 years. The radiation sent forth by the Buddha, the radiation sent forth by the Christ, and now the radiation sent forth by the entire hierarchy and by all the ashrams amassed together, drawing candidates into the ashram and eventually towards the portal of initiation. So, you know, at least let us do no harm. It's the bit of the spiritual approach to the Hippocratic oath that medical people take, that they will do, first of all, will do no harm, because it is possible, given their responsibilities, that they could harm, and of course, unwittingly, they often do. At the same time, competent disciples are searching the world for sensitive and willing aspirants. These disciples are laying their emphasis upon intelligence and spiritual freedom, working out as free and understanding cooperation. These disciples will not be sidetracked by the devotion unintelligently expressed of the neophyte upon the occult way. It is occult students for whom search is now being made, and not mystics. It is for clear thinking men and women that the call has gone forth, and not for the fanatic or the person who sees nothing but the ideal. and who is unable to work successfully with situations and things as they are. So, you know, a sense of realism is really important in those who are being sought. And who cannot, therefore, apply the necessary and unavoidable compromise. The fourth ray is so important here, the art of compromise, and the second ray will also give it. The sixth ray is likely to shun compromise. And I'm sure we've all had experiences either with it or with people who have demonstrated a certain purism which actually gets in the way of the kind of accomplishment hierarchy seeks to see established. So, the sensitive and willing aspirants must be disciplic material. And with the potential of occultism, of occult understanding. And of course, it's difficult for many not to be swayed by the almost inevitable but rather unthinking devotion of those who are drawn into the work. But, you know, one must always remember that when there is unintelligent devotion, it is followed later by the tendency to pull the teacher down from the pedestal upon which the unthinkingly devoted student has placed him or her. So best to avoid any kind of felt flattery from that type of devotion. Just steady as she goes. The continued steady approach and an understanding of what the incoming neophyte is likely to express, and the regulation of that expression. These are desirable responses to what is so often presented, and, you know, to which teachers fall victim. What does DK somewhere say? The devotion is the binding of the hands and feet of the teacher. And we don't want to fall into that compromised situation. Going on. The coming or the advent of the hierarchy on earth will bring the sudden and the beneficent changes, the beneficent change which the enthusiastic desire, you know. Well, one big example of that is Christ comes through the clouds on his white horse and triumphantly subdues all evil doers immediately. Every necessary evolutionary move is always a slow move, and at no time will the hierarchy infringe the natural processes of evolutionary growth or the normally slow development of the various kingdoms in nature towards divine expression. So we have to have a sense of the timing that will characterize the reappearance and the first, the coming out of the members of the hierarchy in preparation for Christ's reappearance. The masters will, however, take advantage of all the points attained by these kingdoms, and we have to remind ourselves that they too are growing in their expression and their sensitivity. You can really see it in the animal kingdom, and I suppose experts in the field of mineralogy and botany would see signs of evolution in those kingdoms. So advantage will be taken of the points attained by these kingdoms, and they will, at certain critical times, they, the masters, utilize the more advanced specimens of the natural types in a selective process in order to bring in something new, better, or different. And this applies to the human kingdom just as much as it does to the vegetable, for instance. There is a line of thought for you in this statement. There is something about the Saptaparna, the sevenfold, seven-leaved man plant, and the true human being who is transcending his animal nature is related to the plant kingdom, which is intended to provide his food largely. And there is a connection between this fourth and second group. Well, DK gives the hint, and then it's up to us to find ways to follow out the line of thought connected with the hint. So there's no rush here, although there is a steady pressure. And especially at this time, when the issues are really decisive and changes of kingdom are expected. Quite a number of human beings are moving from the fourth to the fifth kingdom. Now, is it so that animals, well, they're still in this round, quite a number of animals moving into the fourth kingdom, the highest specimens, although the general influx into the fourth kingdom will occur in the next round, I believe. And do we find those transitional types of forms which are bridges by which the highest specimens of the vegetable kingdom can move into the animal kingdom? And there's also a bridge from mineral to vegetable. And these are very obscure matters, DK tells us, and they're not easily discerned by human beings. So it will not bring the sudden and beneficent changes which the overly enthusiastic people hope for. You can see this in some of the attitudes about the rapture, which is a Christian idea, of being suddenly snatched into heaven as you're driving along. I guess the car will crash and others will be in the car will be dismayed at your disappearance behind the steering wheel. The time will have come and you will be raptured into heaven against all natural law, and others will be abandoned to a much less desirable fate. Well, all of that comes out of the fervid imagination. People who expect the sudden influence of the miraculous. DK is pretty well telling us everything is slow in this evolutionary process, and the hierarchy is not going to infringe on normality, though the pressure is on, and there are times in human evolution and the evolution of other kingdoms when definite transitions are being made, and those times may be filled with unusual stress. Such a transition is on the way now with the higher members of the fourth kingdom, and they are undergoing initiation and entering the hall of wisdom, and they're working on different phases of the unfoldment of the egoic lotus than will be the average non-aspiring human being. So this is the time of the ending of great cycles and the beginning of new ones and major transitions in the human kingdom, if we confine ourselves to that, are in process. And obviously, we want to be part of that, but we want to be part of it in a conscious way. And not just have things sort of happen to us. We want to cooperate with the intended desirable outcome. Everything is on the move now, and probably there are all kinds of cycles of which we are not aware. Cycles involving, let us say, soul expression of the soul of the planetary logos, helping to bring all this about. I mean, you have to ask, why is the hierarchy planning to externalize now? Why is the Christ planning to return to visibility now? It's got to be all under law and well-timed. And, you know, the very big cycles may have something to do with it. There has recently, within the last 2,000 years, been completed a 250,000-year cycle of our seven solar systems around the Pleiades. Many astronomers don't give that credit as being credible, and they have various reasons for denying the possibility, but this is what occultism tells us, and I think we're in a position where we should accept, as hypothetical at least, the sincerely offered hypotheses of occultism or statements of occultism, and maybe we will find there are ways to come to a reckoning and determine the truth or falsity of the statements we are given. We're in no position yet to judge, DK tells us so often, but our faith, if it is real, will bring us into the condition of a more direct reception of occult esoteric fact than those who resist every step of the way. But also, we try to avoid being incredulous. We try to avoid accepting that which doesn't make sense to us. One major technique employed by the hierarchy is a constantly applied stimulation. Of this, the effect of the sun upon all forms is a symbol. It must, however, be remembered that the masters have, therefore, to apply such stimulation scientifically, working first in one direction and then in another, I suppose, for the sake of balance, modifying the stimulation and the inpouring stream of energy to meet the need. Well, sometimes we read the name of the first ray Lord, one of the names, that is, the power that touches and then withdraws. And it gives you the sense of a short exposure to a tremendously dynamic energy. If you put your finger in an electric socket, you're not going to just leave it there, are you? Well, it's not exactly the same, but the point is the applied stimulation must be exquisitely measured, or the results will be unfortunate, or maybe even deadly, maybe even destructive of the form. So they balance the application of energy, first in one direction, then in another, modifying the stimulation and inpouring stream of energy to meet a need. This they do in order to produce the desired result and to bring to fruition that which is latent within the individual. And sometimes, of course, there are individuals who can receive this potent energy directly. I mean, if we're talking about Shambhala energy, and of course, there are many who can receive as individuals the hierarchical energy directly. They work with seven major types of energy, I suppose the rays. Five of these are now in full use, and two of them are rapidly coming into effective service, I suppose. Maybe the seventh ray, maybe the first ray, with the fading out of some others, like the sixth ray. It must be borne in mind that I am here referring to the use of stimulating, vivifying, fructifying, and mutable energies. Also astrological as well, I suppose, under what is called esoterically scientific impression. Yeah. So everything is planned, and we remember DK talking about the meticulous planning of his work, with which he had to abide regardless of expected and often unexpected circumstances, such as the precipitation of the Second World War, the second half of the Great War. What is it? Each phase of the war. Well, maybe a little longer. 4 years was the first precipitated phase, and 6 years from 1939 to 1945, not dealing with lead-ups and the clamor that leads to war, but with the war itself. Being the span of the Second World War. So the ray cycles are very important, and the astrological cycles are very important. But the masters must apply the stimulation scientifically. Otherwise, we would have disruption, destruction, chaos. I'm remembering how very cautious Master KH and DK were when considering the disciple FCD, Roberto Saggioli, working with Master DK, but essentially in Master KH's ashram, and they were debating whether to widen the channel for the inflow of still greater stream of energy. And they decided against it because the sensitivity of this disciple was adequate to the task, and more energy might have caused a compromise in service or some kind of incapacitation. And they are masters. I mean, Shambhala is extremely cautious about the application of that energy, as it carries so much potential destruction with it. So, we're talking about the streaming in of certain energies which vivify, they stimulate, they vivify, they fructify, and they are mutable and subject to a law of mutability or of change. I forget what the actual name of that law is. It's very interesting. Maybe it's mutability, the idea of the various cycles working together to eventually produce a completed picture. So what are these energies? I guess maybe we could be dealing with the seven principles as well as the seven rays, but of course, every ray is tied to a principle. So first, the energy of prana. This is the life-giving energy from the sun, which deals out both life and death. I mean, we've seen deserts subjected to too much of this, health and disease. An overload of prana can cause the disease as well as health can cause congestion. According to the quality of the substance or material form upon which it makes its impact. So always the condition of the form has to be brought into consideration when regulating the kind of flow that can be directed towards a form. This impact and its results are today entirely automatic in application and effectiveness, and are registered as functioning, quote, below the threshold of the consciousness, close quote, of humanity, and necessarily of the hierarchy that is pitched at a still higher point of focus and reception. Its rhythm is established and its effects are well known and proven. Maybe it wasn't always so, because originally initiation had to do with the relationship between the etheric and dense physical vehicles, and prana was involved. So its rhythm is established and its effects are well known and proven. The direction of this energy will eventually be in the hands of that great planetary center, humanity. In other words, we will know what it is we wish to stimulate, and what we wish to stimulate will be in accordance with the divine plan. So this is a seventh ray issue, largely. Therefore, to mankind will then be committed the responsibility for its distribution to the subhuman kingdoms in nature, and whether a form lives or dies will be according to the judgment of humanity that will wield the karmic streams. I think in the book, The Light of the Soul, the Yoga Sutras, different types of prana and their gravitation towards different aspects of the body or etheric body of man are discussed. So this is quite a science, and until we realize that prana really does exist, we're not very close to being able to take up our role in wielding this type of energy. So we go on to another type of energy, the energy of the emotions, or that of the astral plane. It's connected with the sixth ray largely. This energy is today in a condition of extraordinary activity, producing basic changes upon all sides, stimulating desire, both good and bad, and governing via the solar plexus all that lies below the diaphragm in the human vehicle of expression upon etheric and physical levels. It is substantial to etheric and physical levels and governs them, and this solar plexus center is below the diaphragm, whereas the middle point in the pranic triangle is above the diaphragm. This, when combined with a powerful inflow of the energy of prana, produces and stimulates every aspect of the animal magnetism with which every form is equipped. When combined with the energy of the mind, it produces a magnetic personality, and this is both good. Both the good and the bad sense. So the next one of these energies, the energies of emotion, very hard to control on our planet, who is cosmically the victim of personality, and hard to control in our solar system because emotional energy is emanating from a unified field of seven subplanes and not from a divided field, as is the case with the etheric physical and the higher mental and lower mental areas of the mental plane. So really our issue in this particular solar system, which is very Devic, is how to handle the emotional nature, which is so often out of alignment and frustrating the desirable alignment of soul, mind, brain. And then, a number of these energies are interesting. They will have they will have ray associations. But I can see here that it's not just a question of the rays, but of certain principles connected with the rays. Then there's the energy of the mental plane. This is rapidly coming into an unique potency, and its effects today are reaching down into the very depths of humanity. After all, we are, as human beings, we are manas, man, and we are meant to be a mental kingdom, at least to have developed the discriminating mind, which the animal has not yet developed. And of course, the sense of self-consciousness, which the fifth ray can bring, drawing a line of demarcation between the self and the not-self. So it reaches down into the very depths of humanity, thus bringing to the surface the mental capacity which is latent in and hitherto unused by the masses of men everywhere. There has been a long development of the mental unit, even, as I recall, even before individualization. Going on here, it can be described as pouring into the human consciousness by means of four divisions of mental energy. So let's see what those four divisions may be. First, the energy of ideological thought. So, you know, there's a bit of Kamalmanus in that, but if true ideals are contacted from the realm of soul or beyond, then the mental thought form making capacity can carry the impress of those ideas, which are formulated then as ideals. Then, the energy of religious formulations, and these are in process of creating great changes in the minds of men concerning the religious concepts of the world and the new spiritual values. There's a lot of dogmatism here and rigidity, but at the same time, a way of escaping from those rigidities. And here is the energy of idealistic, ideological thought. I think I'll use the same color here. Then the energy which is today producing the struggle for freedom and liberation from environing conditions. Obviously, the first ray is involved here. This may express itself as the world fight at this time for the freedom of the will of men. Ray 4 and Ray 1. Ray 4 representing the struggle and the will representing the first ray representing the will. This may express itself as the world fight at this time for the freedom of the will of men, which would have been expunged had the Axis powers won. The freedom of the will of men as it expresses itself in the press, in speech, in government, or in the struggle for a deepened spiritual life for man. Freedom of speech, it's one of the four freedoms. Freedom of expression, it is, and speech. This energy of liberation was sensed, registered, and voiced for humanity by Franklin D. Roosevelt in the Four Freedoms, so much discussed by men today, that's back in the 40s. He thereby laid the foundation for the new civilization and the new world culture. Interestingly, he was in his sun sign an Aquarian, the ruler, main ruler of which is Uranus, the planet of freedom. So these energies are also coming through the mind, and they are related to the very first one of the four freedoms. And then, let's see, the energy of the spiritual hierarchy of the planet, the Society of Organized and Illumined Minds, as this hierarchical energy is applied today by the hierarchy in the transmutation of the sad and sorry past of humanity into the glorious prospect of the new era. All of these are apparently relating to the energy of the mind. I think so. Yes, the energy of the mental plane and four divisions of mental energy, which maybe, well, they were not the ones I expected. Maybe you expected them. So the energy of ideological thought, so many contending ideologies, and the energy of religious formulations, which for good or for ill are providing a certain structure upon which belief can grasp, and the energy which is today producing the struggle for freedom and liberation from environing conditions, a liberating energy. All these related to the mental plane. And the energy of the spiritual hierarchy. The Tibetan says he does work upon the plane of mind and can reach us there. He works, you know, in relation to the soul, to the higher mental plane especially, but he came even closer, making it possible to think concretely about what he is saying. So the energy of the spiritual hierarchy in the transmutation of the sad and sorry past that we've all been through. This is, as you may well imagine, a sevenfold energy emanating from and directed by the seven major ashrams. So herein come the Ray ashrams, under the direction of the Christ and of the senior masters and Chohans, deciding in council the method, the extent, and the quality of the distribution of energy involved. They decide also where it should make its impact so as to achieve the best and the most constructive results. It is with these sevenfold energy, this sevenfold energy, that the hierarchy will work in preparation for its practical plane manifestation and for the reappearance of the Christ. So hierarchical energy is sevenfold. And we see, you know, the divisions taking place here. First, we're looking at the energy of the mental plane, and before that, the energy of the emotions and of the astral plane, and before that, the energy of prana in relation to the ethers. And then he's going to go on and deal with yet another, the energy of humanity itself. Well, because of other webinars coming up, I'm going to have to break this right now. We have gone as far as page 656, and we'll be dealing with the energy of humanity and then of the second divine aspect, and of the first divine aspect, and of some other energy that is a little bit mysterious. So this is a very, somehow, occult chapter. So 4656. And it looks to me like this is where we began. So 652 to 656, and just about 1 hour. And we finished 84, and we'll be moving on to 86. We just finished 85. There's a lot to absorb here, friends, especially when he begins to talk about the diversification of energies. So this is the end of 85, approximately an hour, and 652 to 656. And then we'll go on to number 86, when it becomes possible to do so. And we don't know what day that will be. Maybe later today, we can see. From 656 onward. All right. Because there are more types of energies that have to come into consideration. Let's make sure that that is... Yeah, organizing the ashrams into form on the earth. So thinking about that organization when the masters again materialize or appear at least, and all the questions that come into it when they emerge, yeah. So they are impressing humanity, especially with these energies which stimulate, vivify, fructify, and it's all under a mode of scientific impression. All right. I think that takes us to what can be done right now. And lots of love, many blessings. I always say, you know, study hard, meditate deeply, and proceed in your service as best you can. So we'll stop the recording and then go on. Bye-bye.